Welcome to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for the hour. Thank you for joining us to listen. I hope you had a good weekend. I like the weather forecast for this week so far. The first part of the week offers up more pleasantly mild temperatures like what we saw this weekend. Today should stay around 80 degrees and sunny, clear skies at night, and then another sunny day tomorrow getting up into the mid-80s with good sleeping nights. Then starting Tuesday night, showers and thunderstorms will begin moving into our area. Wednesday and Thursday should see rain and thunderstorms with temperatures in the 80s. Friday is expected to be sunny, but Saturday has a 30% predicted chance of rain and storms. Sunday also has a 30% chance of rain predicted, but the sun is expected to come out again by then, and it should start inching up to around 87 degrees. So, interesting week ahead. Here's to trying to catch up with rainfall depth. Here's Mr. Dennis Hart with a summary of Iowa news from this past week.
That accident that killed an 11-year-old boy in Adventureland continued to make big news around Iowa last week. The accident took place a week ago Saturday night on the raging river at Adventureland in Altoona when a boat carrying six people flipped over. An 11-year-old boy died and three other people were injured. The ride uses a conveyor belt to move rafts through river rapids. The ride has been in operation for nearly four decades. In 2016, a seasonal worker at the park died when the ride began moving unexpectedly and he fell onto a conveyor belt. A lawyer for the park said last week that safety is the number one priority at Adventureland. But a report that Adventureland filed with the state after the accident said at least one of the raft's eight air bladders was deflated. And last Tuesday, the father of the 11-year-old boy who had died at Adventureland said his son and other family members were trapped by the ride seat belts when the boat carrying them flipped. And the boy's mother told ABC's Good Morning America, in her words, "I feel that Adventureland robbed me of my baby." Meanwhile, the brother of that 11-year-old boy who was injured in that same accident was said to be on life support. Also last week, word that a Northern Iowa nursing home was ordered to pay $6 million to the family of a former resident who died after multiple falls. A jury found that the Timely Mission Nursing Home in Buffalo Center was negligent in the care of 83-year-old Darlene Weaver. It may be the biggest award in any Iowa nursing home negligence case. That same facility is also being investigated for the death of a resident who died of dehydration. There was also word that after nearly 2 years of litigation, Windsor Heights had settled a wrongful discrimination lawsuit filed by a former city administrator. Elizabeth Hansen had sued the city, claiming the city council had violated open meetings and open records laws, and that she had experienced sexual harassment and discrimination while she was on the job. The settlement was for about $125,000. Meanwhile, last week, word that the state of Iowa would not apply for a second round of rental assistance approved this year as part of the federal government's Emergency Rescue Plan Act. That could have meant another $120 million for needy Iowans who qualify. State Finance Authority Director Debbie Durham said the state did not need the second round of funding. That contradicted what advocates for low-income Iowans had said. Durham also took full responsibility for launching too early the first round of that funding program, which provided $195 million in federal funding, of which the state has distributed less than 2%. Also last week, Governor Kim Reynolds announced that hundreds of Iowa cities with less than 50,000 population would be eligible for $220 million distributed by the State Department of Management. Cities can use it for water, sewer, and broadband investments to enhance pandemic preparedness or to launch programs that support workers and small businesses. The money comes from the pandemic relief bill Congress passed in March. There was also word that some complicated rules were delaying grocery vouchers for some families in Iowa. State officials confirmed there have been bumps in getting the food assistance program funded by the federal government moving. The program's so-called PEBT cards are being sent to Iowa students in pre-kindergarten through the 12th grade who missed free or reduced price meals at school because they had stayed home at least some days because of the coronavirus pandemic. Also last week, word that an Iowa State University employee had been accused of mishandling the school's money to the tune of $115,000. Investigators said 25-year-old Miranda Richmond had put that amount on a credit card shared between certain employees. She's accused of using that card at several banks, as well as at Target, Walmart, and Venmo. She was a secretary in the Human Development and Family Studies Department at ISU. On the coronavirus front last week in Iowa, word that the number of state residents hospitalized with the virus is ticking up, though the numbers are close to what they were at the start of the pandemic last year. 85 people were said to have been hospitalized in the state with the virus last Wednesday, 2 weeks after 50 people were said to be in the hospital. This, as public health officials warned that the more transmissible Delta variant of the virus is spreading throughout the state. There was also a report that Iowa ranks 26th among the states in the percentage of adults who have received at least one dose of the coronavirus vaccine. About 64% of Iowa adults have received at least one dose, and 46% are fully vaccinated. Vermont leads the nation with 85% of the adults there having received at least one dose of the vaccine. And last week, the state of Iowa stopped reporting coronavirus data on a daily basis, as it had been for the past year. From now on, updates on case numbers and deaths will go into the state's pandemic website only on Wednesdays. And one more note on the coronavirus, a report that Des Moines' famed bonobos would soon get coronavirus vaccinations. A New Jersey animal health company is donating more than 11,000 doses of the vaccine to zoos and animal sanctuaries around the nation. Bonobos are relatives of both chimpanzees and humans, and there are seven of them at the Ape Initiative Research and Conservation Organization in Des Moines. There was more last week, including word that Iowa's long-delayed redistricting process had almost reached its starting point. The U.S. Census will send out data from last year's survey on August 18th. Iowa's nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency and the state legislature need to work fast to draw and approve new district maps by September 1st. Then Governor Kim Reynolds has until September 15th to approve the maps. There was also word that the federal government will spend $655 million on loans and grants to help launch new meat processing facilities to help compete with four major corporations that control the market. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack made that announcement this past Friday in Council Bluffs. There was also a report that Iowa was among 36 states suing Google over allegations the tech firm is operating a monopoly with its App Store and Google billing. The states claim Google paid off competitors and used contracts to create a monopoly for its App Store on Android phones and Google billing. In other news last week, word that Amazon would open a warehouse in Council Bluffs as it seeks to speed up its deliveries throughout Iowa. The warehouse is the seventh Amazon property in the state. Since the start of last year, the company has opened warehouses in Ankeny, Grimes, and Iowa City, and two in Bondurant. And Davenport officials said that Amazon is building a warehouse in that city's downtown. The company plans to hire 1,000 employees there. Also last week, a report that a Des Moines woman who was the subject of repeated acts of domestic violence is suing the city's police department, alleging that officers failed to arrest her attacker as is required by state law. The city is contesting that claim and is arguing that it cannot be liable for punitive damages. And there was word that the state of Iowa had awarded a Clarinda Correctional Facility employee $220,000 after a judge ruled that her boss should not have fired her after an ex-inmate sexual misconduct complaint. The prison superintendent fired her, but now the state appeals board has approved the payment to her. Meanwhile, state environmental regulators said that an out-of-state firm was illegally storing hundreds of wind turbine blades in three Iowa towns and should be investigated by the state attorney general's office. Global Fiberglass Solutions Incorporated has a combined 1,300 turbines at sites in Newton, Atlantic, and Ellsworth. The Washington state-based company says it plans to recycle the blades, but it has not. So the Iowa Environmental Protection Commission has voted to refer the State Department of Natural Resources case against Global to the Attorney General's office. In Dubuque last week, the City Council approved a city-funded pilot program that would help a few residents install solar panels on their homes. The program comes a few months after state lawmakers ended solar tax credits in the state. There was also word that a district court judge had dismissed a lawsuit seeking to at least pause the Des Moines Public School District plan to build a nearly $20 million stadium in partnership with Drake University. The lawsuit was filed by four Des Moines residents with the Save Our Stadiums group, which had claimed the school district's failure to hold a special election on the plan resulted in a disenfranchisement of the electorate. The new stadium would have 4,000 seats and serve as the home football field for four of Des Moines' five high schools, and also host high school and Drake University soccer games. And how about last weekend's 4th of July celebrations? Des Moines police said they saw an 8% decrease in the number of calls for service related to fireworks on this year's 4th of July. One person was arrested and two others were cited, and one man was hospitalized after a firework blew up in his hand. In another fireworks-related story, a Des Moines splash pool was shut down last Monday because of fireworks debris left over from last Sunday's July 4th celebrations. The Pete Cravaro Park splash pool was closed so that crews could clean it up. Of course, fireworks are not permitted for use in Des Moines. And one last note, and this one's about the upcoming Iowa State Fair. The fair announced last week that there will be no coronavirus limits at the fair this year, though social distancing will be encouraged and hand sanitizer will be sprinkled throughout the fairgrounds. There will be no mask requirements and no capacity limits in buildings or on the fairgrounds. The fair opens August 12th. And that is your summary of the week's news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart. Glad you and I were both here today, and reminding you that I'll be back here tonight, live at 7, with Laura Bellin for Capital Week, when we'll chew over what's been going on at the Gold Dome and what it means for all of us. Then, Paul Weirson and I will host Local Talk this Wednesday morning at 7, and among our guests will be Ames Mayor John Hala. I hope you'll be here for all of it. Between now and then, stay safe and have a great week.
Not love that song. That song takes me right back to high school, to the bus stop. Shout out to Mr. Blitzos with the bus stop. But I rediscovered that song again over the weekend. David Ruffin performed that song in 1969 in The Summer of Soul, a newly released movie by Amir Questlove Thompson that documents the Harlem Music Festival, a breakthrough musical event that occurred the same year as Woodstock, same summer. We just figured out it was in July, because it was the same time when the moon landing happened. And although the event was filmed, but the footage that we can now see in Summer of Soul was never released and virtually forgotten until now with Questlove's production. So I went to see it this weekend, and so much fun, so much fun. If you're a boomer, it's a welcome return, but also a fresh look at so many musical heroes who practically raised us with that music. And if you aren't a boomer and don't know these faces, it is a welcome new addition. You really shouldn't miss it. You guys really missed out on something that we were lucky to experience. I think Sly and the Family Stone was described in the music as the gospel of fun. No kidding. Totally committed to fun. The vests that the Fifth Dimension wore on stage is something you will never be able to unsee. The orange vests with the fringe, oh my God, were treated to music such as, you know, a lot of the music that we now hear behind car commercials. But in the movie, you see how it truly, at the time, was a revolution in sound and thought. And also Martin Luther King's death is revisited through verbal description and sound, and it's really remarkably dramatic. So anyway, lots of fun, I guarantee you. Lots of fun. Hot summer in New York City and Harlem. I saw the movie in Johnston. There's a movie theater that's playing it. Also, I noticed that it belongs to Hulu, and they actually are putting it out on Hulu, too. Okay, so this is Local Talk. I'm here on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host. Thank you for listening, and I hope you had an enjoyable weekend. Carissa Moyna, I just put out the compost pail.
Yes, there you go.
I just put it out. I saw you getting ready to do a show with us, and I suddenly said, oh, my God, I forgot to put out the compost pail this morning. So Carissa Moyna is with Core Living Compost. Thank you for joining us, Carissa, and thank you for visually reminding me to put out my compost. So tell us a little bit about who you are and what Core Living Compost is.
I'm a recent grad from Iowa State, woot woot, alumni now, but I graduated with my civil engineering degree and my MBA as well. And so I'm originally from Northeast Iowa in Elkader, Iowa, very small town up there, but
Elkader, beautiful city of Elkader.
Yes. I'm always surprised people know it because it's so small.
Beautiful waterfall and sister city to a city in Algeria, right?
Right. Yes. So it has some really cool history with it, as well as the Keystone Arch Bridge. Yeah. We could do a whole session on my town. I really love it. But yeah, so I came to Ames looking for a little bigger city, so to say, for college. So then that brought me to composting. So what
naturally
happened was, yeah, naturally, right? Ames composting. Everyone sees that. But no, so
we
I guess
do.
in high school, we started a compost system for our entire school for lunch, dealing with all of that food waste. And then that led me to, I put that on my resume. And my freshman year, I was in the Honors Research Mentor Program. And my research mentor saw that and said, hey, you know, Iowa State has a compost facility. And so he's like, let's do a research project on that. So I got to jump around on the piles of food waste and composting material out at the facility, testing the temperatures as part of our research project.
Where is the facility?
A few miles south of campus. Hmm. And so it's out by the dairy barn. Uh-huh. For Iowa State. And so in 2008, they wanted an alternative use for the manure coming from the dairy barn. And so that is what motivated and inspired them to build the facility, and as well as deal with other types of waste coming from campus, such as like branches, yard waste, leaves, and different things like that, as well as food waste. So, yeah, at the time I was there, they were serving the three major dining centers at Iowa State as far as food waste goes. And so I just saw this great opportunity to bring composting to more people on campus. And so the following semester, my sophomore year, I joined Engineers for a Sustainable World and started the compost team.
So what is Core Living Compost?
Yes. So this stemmed from the idea that the compost team, like, we made a lot of impact on campus, but we could only work on campus because the facility is, with its permitting, can only be used on campus. And so I saw this need to continue composting and expand that into more places, including Ames and the residents that are there that aren't students on campus. And so I had done some interviews in an entrepreneurship class that I had through my MBA around, I went to Wheatsfield and ZW Mercantile and Main Street and just saw that there was a desire to be sustainable with a lot of people that I was talking to, but they didn't have the time or the ability to compost. And so that is where the idea of Core Living Compost Food Waste Pickup Service came. So adding that convenience and simplicity for people to be able to pursue a sustainable lifestyle and get to engage with composting.
This is a small business, right?
Correct. So with the compost team, that was all with our club. Mm-hmm. And really Iowa State focused. And so then this is, yeah, starting a business. We launched June 1st, so we're a very much a baby company. So it's a for-profit business.
Basically, you give people buckets and then you come and pick up their compost.
So we have our cute little 5-gallon green buckets. And so when someone signs up with us, we drop them off at their house and then we come by every week and pick those up and bring them to the Ames Resource Recovery Plant, where there's a food waste dumpster. So Ames, a year ago, had started the food waste diversion program, and it eventually went through many different rotations, but now it's free for citizens to dump their food waste. But they really saw that there wasn't as much engagement as they would like, and so this service is in collaboration with that service that they already offer, but we're adding more of the convenience, and we also clean the buckets, so sometimes the ick factor of dumping them in the dumpster and, you know, that food waste after a week or two can get pretty gross. So those are kind of our value proposition that we bring with our business.
Okay, so give us the definition. What is compost?
Compost is organic matter that has decomposed into a soil amendment. What some people have said, and I previously, actually, I'm always learning more about compost. In the past, I thought it was more of a fertilizer. So you apply compost to your garden or your landscape, and that would bring the nutrients directly to the plants. But actually, it's a soil amendment. So what happens is when you apply it to your soil, it allows nutrients that you apply or water to be retained better in the soil. So it helps rebuild the soil and is a part of the process of helping boost the nutrient intake as well as the water for plants. That's what composting is.
Okay, so when we spoke, you said that you do a compost personality test to help people determine what kind of service they should have, I guess, or what kind of compost they should make. I'm not sure I know how to say this because I'm not educated well enough in the nuances of compost. So I'm going to ask you to give me the test so we can see how that works.
Yes. So my other passion, which was my original business idea, was to help people start composting, whether that was home or wherever they would like it to be. So through that, over the winter break, I started, I made a compost starter guide. And part of that is I love to have fun and do things with puns. And so I made a compost personality quiz to figure out what style of composting best fits your lifestyle.
So, okay. So I'm going to bare my soul, my compost soul here.
Don't worry. It's nothing too complicated. I think you'll like it. So first question is, where will your compost system be located? Inside or outside?
Outside.
Outside. All right. Do you want to build or buy your compost bin?
I think I'd like to buy it.
Buy it? Okay. So that's pretty simple. You got your results. Oh. That's pretty much what it takes to figure out. So you're in occupied orange. So this means that this composter has got a lot on their plate, but aren't you glad you're not an apartment apple? Because you have space outside to get your compost going.
That's right. And so then, running a radio station. Don't have time to build a compost bin.
Exactly right. And so then after that, I go into the details of which options that I have found for occupied orange that are great to get started. So that'd be a tumbler or a holding unit that I've seen that people have bought and had good success with. So that is what the personality quiz, like I thought when I was making it, it'd be more complicated and longer, but it's actually pretty simple to figure out, you know, what style best fits you.
You mentioned the tumbler. How important is it to rotate the compost? I've always wondered that because we actually do have a compost. We don't have a bin. We just have a compost pile in the garden. Sure. But I've always wondered, is it important to rotate it?
Yeah. So for rotation, that is bringing oxygen into the pile. And I like to think of oxygen as the fuel for the composting process. So the more you turn it, the faster that it will break down, because that oxygen is the fuel for the pile. So sometimes people ask me, oh, like my compost pile isn't breaking down. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. And that's one of the questions I ask is, have you been turning the pile regularly? I started my first compost system for my mom at home. And so just this year, we're always learning in every batch. And I was like, Mom, I think you gotta turn the pile more. And she's like, okay. Mm. But yeah, we have tumblers at home, but DIY ones. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we're going to have you come back and kind of go more deeply into the ins and outs of having a compost pile, if you're willing to do that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know, I've got to tell you my weird compost story. We have this groundhog who is like, I don't have a vegetable garden anymore because of this groundhog. And this groundhog, she's always digging tunnels to new places. And recently she dug a tunnel that comes out in the compost pile. Doesn't that seem kind of gross? I mean, compost piles are wonderful, but they don't really smell that great, you know, because it's decomposing food, right? But this groundhog, she's got a tunnel coming up right in the middle of all this stuff now.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, well, I guess what Steve, the Iowa State compost manager, has found in the winter, he's seen some foxes that have dug holes in the pile and made their burrows there because it's warm. Yeah, I wonder if your groundhog is loving the warmth of that pile.
The decomposing causes warmth. It releases energy, right?
Yes. So that mm-hmm. is the beauty of the microbes breaking down the food, is they turn off heat. And so sometimes when you're out there, especially in the winter months, you can see steam coming off the piles. So it's really cool.
Well, Carissa, before you go, the business you start, it's Core Living Compost. I'm speaking with Carissa Moyna, who is, I think, one of two people who started Core Living Compost. You have
That's
a partner,
correct.
Right?
Yep. Another member of the compost team is my co-founder, Andrew.
And I think Andrew is probably going to show up here any minute in front of KHOI to pick up our compost pile. So tell us, if somebody wants to find out about your business and explore what you're doing, where would they find it?
So our main hub is our website. So it's corelivingcompost.com. There you can find our story, what the process looks like to sign up for our weekly or biweekly pickup service. And then as well, as you'd like to sign up, right at the top right corner, there's a button for signing up. As well as we have our Facebook page, which we're having a blast with. It's really just for people to follow our story. As I mentioned, we launched June 1st, so we're very small, but every customer matters to us because, we're just starting out. And so, you can see us on our Facebook page. For example, we're doing a series called 5 Reasons Friday, where we describe each week, give you one reason why composting is impactful and why it's beneficial. So, with various other posts and updates about our business and how we're doing. So CoreLivingCompost.com.
CoreLivingCompost.com. Okay. Thank you, Carissa Moyna. It was great to have you stop by and tell us about your business and, you know, the kind of a new enterprise here in town, right?
Yes. Yep, exactly. Thanks so much, Ursula.
Thank you.
We'll see you around.
See you around.
Leaves are crunched by the bunch, broccoli stalks too. Mix them in the compost bin. It's like magic.
Magic.
When the microbes eat the waste within. Wilted kale, shredded mail, eggshells too. Mix them in the compost bin. It's like magic.
Magic.
When the microbes eat the waste within.
The compost bin.
Just add a little water, then the brew heats up. Turn it now and then and watch it decompose. Spread it on the ground and all around the plants. Oh, how the garden grows. Melon rinds, all kinds, orange peels too. Mix them in the compost bin. It's like magic. When the microbes eat the waste within.
The compost bin.
Bread crumbs, dead plums, coffee grounds too. Mix them in the compost bin. It's like magic. When the microbes eat the waste within.
The compost bin.
The world.
join in to eat the garbage too. New life springs from what once was old. It's a miracle that makes the soil so rich. We call it garden gold. Squished figs, dried twigs, carrot tops too. Mix them in the compost bin. It's like magic. When the microbes eat the waste within
the compost bin.
It's like magic. When the microbes eat the waste within
the compost bin.
Talk about your compost
bin. Hap Palmer with Compost Bin. And this is Local Talk. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. We recently received a call for artists for the art of climate planning. And Vivian Cook is here to explain what the call is, especially if you're an artist. This should interest you. Sounds like a fun project. Vivian, thank you for joining us. So tell us, what are you looking for? You're with Eco Theater Lab, which is a part of the Ames Climate Action Team. You're also a graduate of Iowa State, right, in performing arts?
Yeah, so my name is Vivian Cook, and I am a member of the Eco Theater Lab along with Carissa Menefee and Taylor Sklenar. And the Eco Theater Lab is actually just a small collective of local artists that we're based in Ames, Iowa right now. And we produce readings, theater actions, plays, performances, and workshops that engage community members in conversations about environmental and social justice issues. And then I am also a member of the Ames Climate Action Team and a graduate student at Iowa State with an undergrad degree in performing arts, and I'm currently studying community development.
You've done some work with us a little bit in the past around environmental issues, and we had a lot of fun working with you, so I was happy to see that you're doing this project. Tell us, what are you looking for in your call for artists?
I want to thank Ursula for inviting us on today to give a brief overview of our call and what the project looks like. So the project is called The Art of Climate Planning, and it was inspired by the Octagon Center for the Arts Summer 2020 Outreach to Change project and by the City of Ames' current commitment to developing a climate action plan in the coming months. So we received some generous support from an Ames Small Art Grant. And with that, then we will be commissioning seven local artists. And you can be a visual, literary, and or performance artist. And we're commissioning these artists to develop original art pieces between now and September 2021 that will encourage Ames community members to engage with the climate action planning process that the city is undergoing right now. So each of these artists will be paid $500 for their commissioned work. And then we'll work with those artists as they're developing their pieces. And then we'll coordinate opportunities to showcase this artwork in various locations throughout Ames, where Ames community members will be able to engage with the artwork and then be encouraged to engage in the climate action planning process as well.
So you'll be interacting with them while they're doing their work?
Yes, we will definitely be in conversation with all the artists.
So I ask that because, you know, I'm thinking the person listening to this might think, do I have to do a lot of research about the climate action plan prior to this? But it sounds like it's an invitation to learn from you as well about what's happening and kind of work with you, right?
Yes, and we will definitely, I think we're all learning together about how this process is going to work in Ames. And with the Eco Theater Lab, we are all very, very excited about the climate action planning process and figuring out ways that we can support the community engagement process during the next few months. So it will definitely be a learning experience and a collaborative experience for us all. And we're very excited to work with several artists as they develop their pieces. If you're an artist and you're listening, then we have an online application form where you will essentially write your proposal for a piece that you want to develop. And we ask some pretty specific questions that'll help guide that proposal. And then we'll be looking at those proposals for what the artwork will look like, how community members will experience the artwork, and how the artwork will encourage community members to engage in the climate action planning process. So that'll be a key element that we're looking for is ideas that artists have about how our work can encourage community engagement.
So for the possible applicant, can they be interested in learning about the Climate Action Plan, or do they have to really understand it before they apply?
Oh, no, they can definitely be interested in learning about it, because I think that, from my understanding, the City of Ames is just starting this process with the consultants that they've brought in to work with us on developing a climate action plan. So I think everyone's going to be learning about it, about what the City of Ames wants to create for our climate action plan and how we can come together as a community to inform some of those decisions about what will be best for our community moving forward.
Tell me again the time frame, like when this project will occur, like when is the grant given out and when is it expected to be finished?
Any artists who are listening, the application form is due on July 23rd. So there's a little bit of time left. And that application form, again, it is a proposal for a piece of art that you will be commissioned to develop. And then we plan to have artists have about 6 weeks to develop that work. So the timeline will be, the selected artists will be notified at the beginning of August and then have till about mid-September to complete their work.
So this is a really open-ended call, right? I mean, you could be in a variety of mediums and you can approach it from a lot of different angles, right?
Yes, definitely. And that's what we're looking forward to. And at the Eco Theater Lab, then we approach a lot of our work from an interdisciplinary perspective, from an asset-based perspective, and we believe that artists are an important asset in our community and can engage community members and neighbors and friends and colleagues and peers and in kind of a whole new way. And we want to make sure that that's a part of the conversation in our climate action planning process moving forward.
Well, that's fantastic. I love that. And I hope you get lots of good applications. It sounds like an exciting thing to apply for. So how will you be interacting with people while they're doing the project?
So we will be in communication with artists and we'll have check-in points throughout the process just to make sure, one, we're there to support all the artists who are working on this project. The three of us who are part of the Eco Theater Lab, we have experience producing different projects that are focused on social and environmental sustainability issues. So we just want to make sure we're there to answer any questions, support people, make sure we know what people are working on and how we can best support that journey for the few weeks that artists will have to develop their pieces. So we're very excited to be in communication with all the artists as they work on their projects.
Very nice. Okay, say again where the application can be found.
So if you want to find out more information and apply, then you can go to tinyurl.com/art of climate planning call.
Say that again slowly.
So again, that's tinyurl.com/art of climate planning call.
Okay. And I'll put that on our website as well, that link, just so in case that's hard to remember. Thank you, Vivian. I'm speaking with Vivian Cook, who is with the Ecolab Theater and putting out a call for local artists with the art of climate planning. Thank you for doing this. This sounds like a lot of fun, and I'm excited to see what happens.
We are very excited for it, and please definitely reach out, find us on Facebook, email just ecotheaterlab@gmail.com if you have any questions. And we're very excited, too, and thanks so much to Ursula and KHY for having us come on.
Absolutely. And again, the deadline is the 23rd. So this is the week.
The deadline.
This is the week to get your proposal together. Yeah. Thank you, Vivian. It's good to see you.
Thanks, Isla. It was great to see you, too.
Bye-bye. We're going to scurry right along and speak with Mr. Keith Morgan, Story County Emergency Coordinator. He is back for his monthly check-in at KHOI, and we so appreciate having your voice appear once a month, Keith. It's good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
So far, so good. You know, still surfing the back end of the pandemic and enjoying the really mild weather. But we're going to talk about weather when it's not so mild, right? Because we still have a lot of summer to go.
Oh, definitely. And it is mild right now, but the beginning of June felt more like the beginning of August when it comes to temperature. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about high temperatures, how they impact both individuals, pets, and the overall impact and some of the dangers for our communities that are associated with high temperatures, because what is very pleasant right now could very easily turn into some pretty extreme temperatures later on.
Yeah, like we're hearing in other parts of the country. Yeah.
If you just look out west, this is the sort of stuff that I'm here to talk about.
Okay, so what's important to think about?
Well, first off, high temperatures are always dangerous for adults, children, and pets. The impacts are driven by not just the temperature, but the humidity that's out there and your level of work that you're doing. And that's an important thing for people to remember, is that those three things come together and make it so that it can be extremely dangerous to be out in high temperatures. The National Weather Service is doing a pretty good job of helping us gauge that. Growing up, we all heard about wind chill factors. Well, now they have a feels-like temperature, which is the same thing for us in the summertime. And it takes that temperature and humidity and gives us that kind of same sense of what would that temperature be like without those impacts. So one of the first things is, if you've got to do things during the day, look at those temperatures and those feel-like temperatures and gauge whether it's really important enough for you to get out there if those temperatures are creeping up and to do that activity. And one of the important things is also to try and gauge when is the best time to do this work. It's best if you can get up early in the morning or wait until later in the evening if you got to do anything outside that's going to take a lot of exertion, so that you're not doing it when it's the most hazardous to you. Some people don't have that opportunity, and unfortunately, some people don't have the ability to climate control their homes. When it comes to that, we encourage them, because Story County has not had enough demand to justify opening up specific cooling centers during the summertime. But most of our communities do have some place where people can go, libraries or some sort of a building that is air conditioned, that is public. And if you do hit that point where it's getting to the point where it's very dangerous for you to be in your home, we encourage people to think ahead of time where they could possibly go to and utilize these facilities. It's unfortunate that I should ever have to say this, but never, never, never leave children or pets in a car. The Humane Society says that if you have a car and it's a sunny day and you just crack the windows, within 10 minutes, the temperature inside that car is going to be 102 degrees, and in 30 minutes, it's going to be 120 degrees. And that's just not safe for children and pets.
Yeah, and I have addition to that, I'm guilty of this myself. My father is 100 years old, and we were in the car. This was when it was still a little bit warmer. And I went to get something in a store, and I left him in the car. Same thing happened. He got overwhelmed by heat. So old people, too.
Yeah, exactly. We need to look out for everybody. You know, if you see a car where it looks like that there's either a pet or a young child that's in distress, go ahead and call on into our dispatch agencies, and they'll have law enforcement come on out and check on that individual, because it's just sad when you hear about young children being left in a car and dying because of that kind of heat. Just don't take that risk. Make sure that if it's important enough for you to take the child with you, or just leave your pet at home if you don't have any place to take them when you're inside the building. So I really stress that to people. But, you know, there are some times that you're going to be outside and you're not going to think that it's all that hot out there. Here are some things for you to look for on the medical side. So the first thing is hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. Drink lots and lots of water, because that water is going to become the sweat that's going to cool you and try and keep you safe out there. And like we talked about, try and reduce your physical activity and try and make sure that you stay out of the sun as much as possible. And if you are going to be in the sun, try and cover your exposed skin with sunscreen, the highest SPF that you can, to keep yourself from getting sunburns and the long-term possibility of skin cancer. But if you are out there and you start to feel pain or you get that cramp in your calf, well, that means that you're probably starting to get to the point where you've got heat cramps. And this is your body's first warning to you that you better start paying attention to things. And when that starts coming, reconsider what you're doing. Try and, again, use all those techniques that we've talked about to reduce your exposure to the heat.
So the heat cramps are the first warning sign.
Exactly. And those can progress to heat exhaustion, where you're just drenched in sweat, you're starting to get more cramps, and it's progressing so you're starting to feel maybe a little bit dizzy, you're getting headaches, and you're getting nausea. You're not always going to get all of these symptoms, but if you start to get those symptoms, then now you're starting to get to a serious situation. Get out of the heat, get into a cooler place, and make sure and get yourself cooled off, because that next step is a very, very serious medical situation. It's called heat stroke. Mm-hmm. Your body goes up to a temperature of 103, the skin turns red and hot. And most importantly, it stops sweating. The body is just shutting down on here, and you are really in a dangerous situation. Your pulse rate's going to come on up. Don't mess around with this one. Call 911. Get medical help at that time.
I used to work for the city of New York as a park ranger in the city parks, and we had to wear wool trousers even in the summer, and New York gets hot in the summer. I remember one of the rangers got heat stroke. You know, everybody was talking about how he was sitting in a bathtub of cold water for days and couldn't bring his temperature down. I actually experienced the beginning of heat stroke. It feels very, very weird when it starts to happen. And I recognized that, you know, this was really serious. And so I kind of broke rank. And there was a toy store in the vicinity of Central Park. And I went and stood in the toy store for about an hour to just for the air conditioning, which I could have gotten fired from, but I recognized that I was having the first signs of heat stroke, which is it really feels like everything is starting to go wrong in your body, and you just can't cool down. Your body stops being able to bring its temperature down, and it's very frightening.
And, you know, some of that stuff with the headaches and the dizziness, you're starting to lose that mental ability to really think straight. That's where it's important. And you may want to gut it out, and especially if you're a person that's used to working outside, if you're working for a business, but you do your business no good if you get to that point, because if you do get a heat stroke, you are not going to be at work for a while. So
yeah, think about and that. It's funny, you can feel it when the body has stopped being able to cope. It's like you just, I don't know how to describe it, but all of a sudden the body just can't cope, and you can feel that you can't stop the temperature from rising anymore in your body. And it's kind of like when a gas pedal gets stuck or something. And it's very frightening.
And those that are around you, you may be a bit hesitant to call 911, but when you get that point where they're turning red and they've stopped sweating, that's beyond what the normal person should be trying to take care of. And mm-hmm. Don't hesitate. Get those people help right away, because the hospitals will have better ways of trying to bring that temperature down and protect that core body.
Yeah. Is heat stroke actually deadly? Can you die from
it? It can
stroke?
Be. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can die from heat stroke. So mm-hmm. that's why it is a 911 level kind of emergency. Mm-hmm. And we just... everybody needs, this is where we need to be a community, and everybody needs to be watching out for everybody else while you're out there. If you see somebody that's looking like this, talk to them a little bit. If they're not seeming coherent, again, probably another indication that they're getting into a heat emergency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The long-term effects of heat is drought, and we are in a drought right now. Yes, we've gotten a little bit of rain, but we are by far very, very short of what we need. And some of the long-term impacts of that are elevated fire risk. Right now, these small but regular rains are keeping that fire risk down, but if we have extended periods without rain and you start to see that grass start to turn brown, help everybody out and minimize the chances of starting a fire by not doing any sort of outdoor burning that isn't in a controlled environment. And this is creating a long-term stress on our water system. You've heard what's happening down with the Des Moines water system, having concerns about their long-term viability on being able to produce water. So again, if you're seeing that we're having long periods without water, really consider all your water usage, and most definitely try and schedule your water usage when there isn't a lot of citywide impacts, because a lot of people don't remember that those water tanks, those that we have, are what we use to fight fires. And if those get too low on water, that really impacts the safety of the community. So, you know, long term, again, if we droughts do impact our agriculture, they can produce higher prices for some of our commodities and long term impacts on our crops.
Okay. And so how are you keeping cool, Keith?
Well, I too try and do most of my work that I've got to outside. For instance, I'm going to go move our command trailer. Going to do that in the morning instead of waiting until the high noon to do that sort of stuff when I possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so much. As usual, a lot of good tips about how to stay safe, and we really appreciate it. And let's hope that it doesn't get too hot this summer and that we won't have any heat strokes, right?
That, and hopefully we'll start to get a little bit more rain on a much more regular basis.
Yeah, that would be great. Okay, well, thank you, Keith. See you next month, right? See you in August.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, already to August.
Yeah. Okay, and you have been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. I've been speaking with Keith Morgan, the Emergency Manager Coordinator for Story County, and really good, vigilant advice for staying safe always. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. on Mondays, and at 7 p.m., tune in to Capital Week with Dennis Hart and Laura Bellin for a report on what's happening in Des Moines. This program was engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Mike. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And please remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. And I really highly recommend that you go to the homepage of our website and check out the link for signing up for a conversation with Mitch Jeserich, who does Letters in Politics at 5 p.m. I know Mitch personally. He's a fantastic journalist. He's one of a kind. And his show, if you have not listened to it, is definitely a real treasure. So Mitch has agreed to get together with KHOI listeners and talk about his craft from his point of view. And this is an incredibly rare opportunity to get a glimpse behind the scenes of the minds and hearts of people who make community radio great. So go to khoifm.org and sign up for joining. It's a free event. We're doing it as an appreciation for you, our listeners. And remember that you're what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. So while you're at the website, you can also sign the donate button. Anyway, thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.